Alright, we're gonna go ahead and get started again. We have, I guess, four more readers now. And our first reader of the second half is Rebecca Schwab. Her little haiku, writes trashy novels under different pen name. Margarita time.
Like you know me for my whole life.
Okay, so I am reading from a story called 6 o'clock House, which I wrote based on my time spent at a greenhouse in Western New York. And the characters are based on the people who worked there, who I didn't like, but they provided great material for me. And I would like to say thank you to them, but then I'd have to admit that I wrote about them. So I'm going to keep it a secret. And I should tell you that I'm reading from the middle. The ending is very dramatic, so I don't want to give it away. But if you want to know, you can ask me after the show. I'll tell you for a dollar. Okay, so here we go. As soon as I walk into the shop this morning, Mary tells me I've got to repot Nicotiana in the 6 o'clock house. I smile, happy about my task. I've never mentioned it to Mary, but the 6 o'clock house, 40 steps to the right of the first house, is my favorite of the three greenhouses. Mary has complained to me several times about how she hates this house. It's the oldest of all the greenhouses and was here when they bought the property. There's something wrong with the ventilation, she says. She says it smells like mildew, and the ground beneath the plant tables never properly dries. I love the smell. I think decay is a beautiful part of a plant's life, the rotten cellulose becoming a cozy bed for next year's growth. To me, it doesn't smell like mildew. It smells like something deep and important, like the earth returning to itself. The air in this house is wet and heavy, so damp that cigarettes won't light. But I don't crave them in here. I spend a few minutes breathing slowly, feeling the moisture soothe my smoke-scarred lungs, the dampness wrapping my skin in a moist quilt that muffled the sounds of the tractor in the grape fields and the chatter of customers outside. It's called the 6 o'clock house because there used to be a clock hanging in here that stopped on 6 o'clock, no matter how many times we changed the batteries and reset it. After more than a year of this, Mary got spooked and threw it away. She said, there's only one trickster, and she would afford his evil no purchase on her property. But when she wasn't looking, I took it out of the garbage. It hangs in my room at home, and it works fine. I stand facing the middle plant table. It extends the length of the house, measuring about 30 feet long and 6 across. It's made of old chicken wire stretched across crude pieces of lumber. This is so excess water drips through the bottoms of the nursery pots to the ground, preventing the plant's roots from rotting. Mary told me that the ground beneath the center table and the two that flank the long walls was originally composed of gravel on inhospitable clay. But after so many years of water falling beneath the tables carrying little bits of soil and fertilizer, the ground has become a lush tangle of weeds and tall grass. I dropped a small trowel in there once and never found it. The tables are covered now by rows and rows of soil-filled transplant trays called flats, made up of 10 four-packs that snap apart. Customers have the option to buy the flowers by the pack for $1.80 each or by the flat for $15. When Mary's preaching gets to be more than I can listen to, I go out into the greenhouses and start counting plants and adding up their prices. It's a tactic called grounding, and I learned about it by overhearing two women discussing its benefits at Gary's, the local diner. I attempted it immediately by counting my French fries and the approximate number of bites that were left in my cheeseburger, finding that it did distract me from my mother's loud chewing. I take my small steel transplant fork out of the back pocket of my jeans. It's actually a seafood fork meant for prying crab meat out of the shell. But its two sharp little prongs work great for jabbing holes into soil and for picking up seedlings by catching their small stems in the V of the fork, the way a person would hold a snifter of brandy, the stem between the middle and third fingers, the bowl cradled in the palm. In this way, I lift and transplant 37 flats of Nicotiana seedlings. After a few weeks of growing, their star-shaped flowers will bloom in warm-toned reds and yellows. There were actually 371 seedlings that germinated in the plug trays. Mary says when there's an uneven number, we should throw the leftovers away. Instead, I tuck the extra seedling in with another. It's a perfectly good seedling, and I hope it will grow to be my favorite variety, a light butter-yellow background with an overdusting of purple-red Merlot. I bought a pack of Nicotiana seeds a few days ago with my employee discount, and I hope I'll get that color when I get around to planting them. On my lunch break today, I'm going to surprise Elena by picking her up from school. She's got a half day today because the teachers need time to finish end-of-the-year grades. Usually she rides the bus, but I want to take her for ice cream. I saw a social studies test on the fridge that she got a 95 on. Maybe if I reward her for it, she'll want to talk to me more about school and her life in general. The prospect has me in a good mood. Also, as soon as I get back, Mary is leaving to do her weekly volunteer work at the county home. Roger is running errands for his mother today, so I'll be closing the shop by myself. At 12:15, I pull up outside of the front doors to the middle school in my 93 Taurus. Its blue exterior is a little rusted, but it runs great. It's really the only thing that I won in the divorce. I was supposed to get child support, but I've never seen a dime. It's easier this way. Nothing tying us to him, no visitations. Elena doesn't ask about him, and I'm grateful. I don't see her in the crowd of kids standing around outside of the school, so I turn off the engine and get out, crushing my cigarette on the pavement with my heel. I start walking towards the doors, weaving around teenagers and discarded backpacks on the sidewalk. I see my daughter standing with three girls I don't know a few feet to my right, and I wave. She doesn't wave back, but maybe she doesn't see me. I bend over to tie a shoelace that's come loose on my keds, but leaning down causes a coughing fit. It's timely. While I'm trying to clear my throat, I hear one of her companions ask my daughter, "Who's that lady?" Expecting an introduction, I straighten up and open my mouth to say hello, but Elena just shrugs, her face blank. By the time I start the engine and pull away from the curb, thick tears are running down my cheeks and catching in the creases of my neck.